What up, what up, what up, everybody? This is the Dr. Football Ultimate Patriots Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Dennis Tien, recording remote tonight. I'm no longer in the middle of the ocean. The service should be better. The sound should be better. We've got a million things to talk about tonight. An absolutely epic win in Foxborough. And in case you haven't noticed, everything is going crazy around the NFL. Mike Tomlin, gone. Jim Harbaugh, gone. Greg Roman, gone. Petullo in Philadelphia, gone. Mike McDaniel, Justin, your boy, gone. We're going to get to all of it. We'll start in Foxborough, but before we do, I'll bring in my colleague, Justin Fineman. How you doing, my man? What's going on tonight?
You know, I'm doing fantastic. What an opening round, the NFL playoffs. A lot of exciting games, I would say. You know, it was a good weekend of football. I know we were both at this Patriots game. We're going to get into that. But just overall, super satisfied with Wild Card Weekend. I think it was entertaining from start to finish, to be completely honest.
Every one of these games was actually entertaining.
Yep.
Every single one. And you can't, there have been so many years where these wild card games have been just trash. And this year, it was just like every single one of them. Even the one last night, which was probably the most one-sided one. It was a close game into the third quarter. It was entertaining. It was kind of entertaining to watch Rodgers fall apart like he did, you know. So it was an entertaining game. So it was an entertaining weekend for sure.
Yeah, totally was. I mean, you know, from start to finish, like you said, and not only entertaining, but some of those games I'd put up there as being some of the better games I can recall seeing in recent memory. You know, that Bears-Packers game, unbelievable. I mean, a lot of those games were just absolute nail biters that came down to the wire. You can still hear in my voice, you know, I was at the Patriots game on Sunday night with you. That place was rocking. Great to get back to our winning ways, winning home playoff games at Gillette Stadium in January. It was just overall a great weekend to be a Patriots fan, a great weekend to be a fan of the NFL.
It was a great weekend to be a Patriots fan for sure. And that was a great, great game on Sunday night. And that's what we're going to start with, as always, in Foxborough. And it was an electric atmosphere. It was an electric atmosphere in Gillette Stadium. It was just like the good old days, Justin. And I'm going to tell you, I've always felt like the crowd noise in Gillette is underrated. I think we have a terrific home field advantage. Yeah. But since Robert Kraft built the giant lighthouse out there in the wall, I'm telling you right now, that thing pushes more noise down towards the field and holds the noise. That stadium is louder now. Even louder now than it was before. And I think you could really tell on Sunday night because the Chargers had 5 pre-snap penalties, which was, that's a lot. False start, 3 false starts, 1 delay a game, 1 illegal motion. Yep. I mean, the noise was a huge factor on Sunday night.
100%. Yeah, you could easily tell that offense was struggling. You know, obviously the defense stepped up and played really well. But you can't tell me that the crowd didn't have something to do with that, 100%.
And so many of the players commented on that, too. A lot of them were taught how loud it was. It was an electric atmosphere. It was a great atmosphere. And as usual, I mean, what are the stories of this game? Well, I think there's a couple of them. One is, I think, the Patriots' defense. Number 2 is we're going to talk about Drake May in a minute and sort of a mixed bag performance from him. But I think, you know, one of the big stories from this game was your boy, Justin Herbert, who you called on the last episode of the podcast. You know, you've always said he is a loser. He is the president or the vice president of the Talented Loser Club, you know, and really he came up small. He came up small. Like, stop making excuses for this guy. There were plays to be made out there. He didn't make them. He was rattled. He was too small for the moment. There were guys open that he missed. He had 4 or 5 turnover-worthy plays that he was really lucky. He only turned the ball over one time. And I thought he got great pass protection. You know, that was one of the big stories coming into the game. Will Justin Herbert get pass protection? I wish Drake May got pass protection like Justin Herbert got in the first half of that game. He didn't do anything with it. He came up small again.
No, he came up super small. And look, at this point, you know, it happens once, maybe it happens twice. You can make excuses. You can't make any more excuses for this guy. I'm sorry. You know, the talent might be there, and from a physical asset standpoint, He does not have what it takes to be an NFL quarterback and win big games and come up big in big moments. I'm sorry, he just doesn't. 3 points, absolutely abysmal. He was the vice president of the Talented Losers Club, but I think he got himself promoted to president after this weekend, and Trevor Lawrence bumped himself. Did it. And Trevor Lawrence, I mean, he's still a loser, but he at least did a couple respectable things against Buffalo.
I thought Trevor Lawrence availed himself pretty well. I mean, he obviously barfed on his shoes and threw his obligatory two picks that probably cost him the game, but at points he made some plays in that game.
He did, exactly.
Justin Herbert did nothing. So I agree. We need to promote Herbert to the president of the Talented Loser Club. And we can make Trevor now the vice president.
100%. Yeah, Herbert looked absolutely awful, kind of crapped all over himself. And you know what? Even in like his post-game interview, like it was just a pathetic answer that he gave at the microphone when he was kind of asked like, you know, what the issue is, like, you know, what he's got to do to be. He's just like, you know. I don't have an answer. We haven't done it yet. I haven't done it yet. But it's like, dude, like at this point, you don't have any excuses. You know, there's no reason why anybody should still be looking at Justin Herbert as an elite quarterback in the NFL after this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I agree and I disagree. And I just in defense of, I mean, look, I totally agree with you. He's the president of the Talented Loser Club. There's something missing there. I totally agree with you. But there are two excuses that his defenders are going to come up with. Number one is the offensive coordinator sucked and he just got fired, right? He was running the JV offense, the 1997, you know, Bay State Conference JV offense or something, and that's going to be excuse number one. And then excuse number two, and it's probably some credibility to this, is going to be the fact that they did lose their two best offensive linemen for the season, Rashawn Slater and the other guy from Penn, the other guy, the tackle, name escapes me right now.
But they lost Joe Alt.
Joe Alt, from Penn State. And they lost those two guys, and that Herbert was playing with an incomplete team around him. And, you know, my answer to that would be, look at what Drake May is doing throughout this year with what he has around him and the limitations on this Patriot roster. And look at the difference between May and Herbert. And that's my answer to that.
Yeah. And I would just like to add two things to that. A, you know, obviously, like you said, when the play calling sucks and your two tackles are down and your offensive line, you know, isn't playing as good as they could be, that's tough to work with, right? That being said, 3 points is absolutely disgraceful. I mean, he did nothing to help himself in that game. Obviously, like you said, there were some things holding him back, but he did nothing to help himself out in that game. The second thing I'll say is, you know, after we saw, you know, the situation the week beforehand where everyone was saying, well, you know, the Chargers sat Justin Herbert in week 18, and the rumors were that, oh, they wanted the Patriots. This was the defense they wanted. This was the team that they thought with those limitations, they would have the best luck against. They could exploit the most. You don't then get to come make excuses. You got what you wanted. You said you wanted the Patriots. Right. You got what you wanted.
That's right.
And you put up 3 points against them. So you don't get to have it both ways.
Yeah, I mean, I love that the Chargers, they tanked that game in Denver. Obviously, they wanted to come to Foxborough, and they got the matchup that they wanted, and they completely barfed on their shoes.
100%. So, yeah.
And, you know, Justin, and the other thing is, too, like, guys were open, and he missed them. So you can't blame the offensive coordinator for that. And then he got, I think, something like 3.6 seconds on average to throw the ball in this game, which is one of the highest totals in the NFL this year. So a lot of this was him holding the ball, not making reads, not seeing guys. So it's hard to blame the offensive line or the offensive coordinator for that.
Exactly. So, yeah, I think, you know, at this point, was it an ideal situation for Justin Herbert? No, but the excuses, I think, have to kind of stop here. And I think we need to give this guy his proper criticism, because when he goes out there on a random Sunday in a game that doesn't matter, that nobody cares about, and he throws for 300 yards and 3 touchdowns, everybody wants to get on and talk about how talented he is and how good the guy is. But it's time, I think, he takes his medicine when he comes out and he continuously lays eggs in big moments, especially the playoffs. You know, I was looking at his playoff statistics the other day. He's got like 2 or 3 times as many turnovers as he does touchdowns. He's 0-3. His QB rating is in like the 50s. There's no excuse at this point.
He's running out of them. And I'll say one more thing about this, Justin, before we move on to another topic. And that is, you know, look, is it a perfect situation? No, but I don't think Justin Herbert is a bad quarterback. Maybe you do. I think he's like a 10 to 15 quarterback. But what irks me is when people talk about him as like a top five quarterback and the promissory greatness, like, oh, you know, if he just had the pieces around him, he'd be great. And that's what drives me crazy. And look at what Josh Allen did on Saturday with that Jacksonville against that Jacksonville defense with nothing out there with him. That's a true top five quarterback. That's what a top five MVP quarterback does. Justin Herbert is simply not at that level. I don't think he's a bad quarterback. I think he lacks intangibles. I don't know if he's a winner, but let's stop putting him in the upper echelon of quarterbacks, you know, when it's Burrow, Allen, Mahomes, and Lamar Jackson and Justin Herbert. I'm sorry, Justin Herbert doesn't fit in that group.
But, you know, and I would agree with that, but to add on to that, you know, personally, the way I look at, you know, a top quarterback, when you tell me, hey, is this guy an elite quarterback? Are they a top five or top seven quarterback? I think what's implicitly included in that is that a quarterback that can go out and win you a Super Bowl or at least help you compete for a Super Bowl, right? And Justin Herbert is one of these guys. It's the same argument I've made for in the past with Kirk Cousins and Sam Darnold and some of these other guys that you might get a great regular season out of him. You might end up in the postseason year after year. He might be physically talented, but there is a defined ceiling to what this guy is going to be able to bring your organization. And that to me is how I decide who I think a top five or elite, so to speak, quarterback is. And Justin Herbert, I think his ceiling is pretty well defined at this point.
No doubt about it. And I would just say to segue into the next topic, you look at what Drake May did this year and the limitations on this roster, which, by the way, I thought were on full display on Sunday night. And that's, you know, the way May is elevating this roster. And you could make any excuse you could make for Herbert, you could make for May and then some.
Yeah.
Right. But May was able to make plays in the second half of this game that won the Patriots this playoff game. And that's a credit to him. Herbert hasn't been able to do that.
Exactly. And May had problems with the offensive line, right? I mean, Campbell was getting beat a bunch by guys like Khalil Mack and mm-hmm. Odafe Owe. Like he got hit, you know, he turned the ball over a couple times. Like he was under pressure. That Chargers defense played, for all intents and purposes, pretty freaking well on Sunday night. But the difference was May showed that he has the ability to step up and make a couple of key plays that can swing a game like that. Justin Herbert didn't do that once. You know, I think about that Hunter Henry throw that Drake May had. Justin Herbert didn't have a single throw in the entire game that just right. said, hey, I'm here and I can play if I get the opportunity and I get some time and I got an open guy. Like, there was just none of that. That was the difference to me.
1,000%. So let's talk about Drake May since we're on him anyways. And, you know, this was not the kind of performance we've been used to seeing from May for most of this year. This was kind of a mixed bag. Two turnovers, could have easily been three, five, 6 of 15 in the first half, really struggled in the first half of this game, missed some throws. I thought he came up huge in the second half, 11 of 14, hit some big plays, made a next level elite throw to Hunter Henry in the biggest possible spot, a few huge plays with his legs. Look, this was a tough spot for Drake May. Really good defense. This offensive line struggled. Okay. Will Campbell really struggled. I'm really nervous about what Will Campbell is going to be like next week against the Texans. I think that Drake May's performance on Sunday, was it a great performance? Did he revert? No. Did he revert back to, you know, maybe sometimes trying to do a little too much? Performance than meets the eye.
Yeah, I look, it obviously wasn't Drake May's best game, but I think, you know, like you alluded to, he took advantages and none of that, but look, it wasn't his best game. The offensive line didn't play great. Chargers defense played pretty well, but Drake May took advantages when those windows opened and he kind of, you know, made something happen when he needed to. The rushing was huge, right? I think about that rush he had at the end of the first half to get them into field goal range. That was like a 40-something yard rush, I think, you know, where he took off up the middle. Obviously, that throw to Hunter Henry that made it a two-possession game. It obviously wasn't the breakout, you know, ass-kicking performance that I think we all wanted to see out of Drake May. But at the end of the day, when he got an opportunity. He made some good plays. He was resilient, right? We talked about his 100%. Resiliency. That I think
he did not get rattled. I thought that was the best part about this. Like whatever adversity he faced, he did not get rattled at all. Like he battled.
Exactly. I mean, you can argue that his two biggest plays, you know, came at two of the biggest moments, and that was when it was a tie game and he had that rush at the end of the first half. And then when it was a one possession game and he made that beautiful throw to Hunter Henry in the fourth quarter. So he still, you know, even though it wasn't perfect, he still showed his resiliency and he still showed his ability to stay cool, calm, and collected and make a big play when it counted.
Yeah, I thought that was the difference in the game, frankly. If you're asking me, it was really the way May handled his adversity versus the way Herbert handled his. That to me was really the difference in the game. Totally. And this is the NFL playoffs, Justin. Like, let's not forget, you know, this isn't week 15 against the pathetic, hapless Jets where you're going to throw five touchdowns in half and it's going to be perfect. That's not how most of these playoff games go, as we saw across the league this week. So, you know, May made the plays he needed to make. He responded to adversity. And I thought he played a really great second half. Like that is such a great sign.
I totally agree. It was, again, it could have been better, but there were some encouraging things. And at the end of the day, too, I think it was huge to get that monkey off his back and get that first playoff victory right now. I think no matter what happens, I would definitely be disappointed. You know, if they lose next week to the Texans or whatnot, but no matter what, at least, you know, you can move forward saying Drake May has his first playoff victory under his belt. And that's not looming over him moving forward into future seasons.
Well, let's talk about this. Cause you just kind of brought this up. Are the Patriots playing with house money at this point? Like moving forward, you know, have they met expectations and are they playing with house money? Or are we still going to be disappointed? Are you still going to be disappointed if they don't go any further?
I mean, I'm going to be disappointed no matter what. I mean, if this team doesn't win a Super Bowl, I'm going to be disappointed, right? But it's because they've earned that right for us to have those expectations at this point. And those expectations did not exist in the offseason. They did not exist in the beginning of the year. This team earned, you know, the right for us to consider them a contender. So they are playing with house money, but, you know, make no mistakes about it. I'm not, you know, just like Vrabel said the other day, you know, we're not taking, you know, consolation prizes, you know, whatever it is. So I'd like to see this team win.
100%. And like, look, both things can be true. Like, are they playing with house money? Have they exceeded expectations? Yep. Yeah, absolutely. But how often do you make it to the final eight of the NFL? And you've got the game at home and the Texans are a good team. I respect the crap out of the Texans. This is a winnable game for the Patriots. This is a game I would even say that they should win. So, you know, you've got the possibility, a real possibility of hosting a conference championship game next week if Buffalo knocks off Denver. I mean, the path is there. You cannot just let these opportunities slip through your fingers. And I think that even though, this is way sooner than any of us expected, we'd be back here. And you know, they are playing a little bit with house money. You know, you got to make the most of this opportunity if you're the Pats and go out and win a Super Bowl.
I totally agree. I mean, look, and you know, I'm not saying this is what's going to happen to the Patriots, but we've seen teams, you know, they kind of get those seasons or they have these opportunities where everything seems to kind of fall in line and they squander it. And then, you know, you don't know if you're going to get that moment back again. Right. I think about the Lions, who a few years ago should have been played in and probably won a Super Bowl. And instead they regressed each year since then. Right. No matter even despite arguably getting better, as a roster. So it's like, you know, the Patriots, everything is just kind of shaken up for them. You know, the ability to host potentially an AFC championship game, you know, drawing some of the opponents that they had, not having to go up against a Patrick Mahomes or a Joe Burrow, things like that. You know, the opportunity is there and I'd like to see them capitalize on it.
1,000%, Justin, 1,000%. They have to capitalize on this opportunity. I won't be angry or, you know, heartbroken if they don't. I mean, because I feel like this is still a young team, but I, you know, like you said, look at Joe Burrow. Perfect example, right?
Right.
Well, he'll be back. Well, it's been 5 years.
Right.
He ain't nowhere near going back.
Yep.
Before your time, the most classic example of this, Dan Marino, right? Yep. Dan Marino made it in his second year. Oh, the Dolphins will be back. They got Don Shula, a ton of young talented players. They never made it back again. Marino played 16 years, never made it back to a Super Bowl. So yep. You got to take these opportunities when they come to you. And I hope the Patriots make the most of this one.
100%. Yeah. And I think they will. I expect them to beat the Texans, right? Yep. And then you know what? Look, when it comes down to an AFC championship, you either host at that point, you'd either be hosting Buffalo or traveling to Denver. Both of those I consider to be extremely difficult games. And if they were to lose either of them, you know, I wouldn't be happy, but I wouldn't be sitting there, you know, shaking my head.
Crestfallen or anything like that.
Yeah. Exactly.
But I love Buffalo this week. I love Buffalo. And I think it's going to be Buffalo. Let me just say this right now. It's going to be Buffalo at New England. And that is a true 50-50 game.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I mean, talk about the excitement in Gillette if you have Buffalo coming in for an AFC championship, Super Bowl on the line. I mean, that just makes my mouth water just thinking about the potential of that, you know?
100%. So how do they beat this Texans team this weekend, Justin? We saw them last night. We've seen them all year. They were flying under the radar for so long, you know, to like the halfway point of the year. And then that defense just burst onto the scene. And they truly have an exceptional defense with Danielle Hunter and Anderson, the other Will Anderson, the defensive ends. I mean, they got speed at every level of that defense. You saw it last night against Pittsburgh. I do worry about how this team is going to protect Drake May. And I think one of the keys to this game, I'm going to give you two names that I think are so important for the Patriots to win this game. Number one is Will Campbell. You have to be better. You're the number four pick in the draft. I know he missed a few games with injury. This was his second game back. He's played 14 or so games in the NFL at this point. You have to be better against the Texans than you were against the Chargers, or it's going to be a big problem. And then number two, this is why we're paying Josh McDaniels, or someone's paying Josh McDaniels the big bucks, right? Because his ability, and we saw this throughout the Brady era, to scheme around these sort of fast, aggressive defenses in these big games, that's sort of the hallmark of who Josh McDaniels is. So we're counting on Josh McDaniels, I think, this week to come up with a game plan that will neutralize some of what the Texans do and some of their speed.
I agree. And I think Josh McDaniels will do that. I feel pretty confident in his ability to scheme up a good game plan. You know, my two things when I look at this game, the two keys to success to me are A, you know, the defense has to come out in play similar to what we saw this past weekend, because I really don't think that Texans offense is as good as it should be or needs to be, especially if they don't have Nico Collins. And I think the second thing is, you know, limiting the mistakes and the turnovers. We saw that really when that game got out of hand for Pittsburgh is when the turnovers started to pile on and things kind of all went downhill from there. Realistically, this is a game that you can win putting up 17 to 21 points next week. Because
I expect it to be that kind of game. I expect it to be a similar game to what we just had.
100%. So you don't need to go out and put up 30 plus points to beat this Texans team. You just need to limit the turnovers, and that defense has to hold the Texans to maybe 17 or less. That's what I think the two keys are.
1,000% agree with that. 1,000%. May has to sometimes learn to take the L. And he got better at this as the year went on. I don't know if it was the weight of the moment. I did feel like a little bit, especially in the first half of that game on Sunday, he tried to do a little bit too much a couple times. And it was almost like that going back to Pittsburgh and Oakland a little bit, where he was holding onto the ball a little too much. Like, look, just take the damn sack. It's okay. Guess what? Houston's probably going to have 4, 5, 6 sacks in this game. Yep. I guarantee it. But I don't think the Patriots will lose if they get 4, 5, 6 sacks. If you fumble the ball three times or you throw a pick or two, that's what's going to cause the Patriots to lose this game. So May has got to learn to take the sack, not throw high risk pass, not put the ball on the ground, and live to see another day.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's not forget too, you know, I know they've been a lot better in the back half of the season, but this Texans team's their Achilles heel in the first half of the season was their offensive line, right? CJ Stroud was under a lot of pressure. He was having trouble getting things going back there. That's where I think, you know, there's a lot of talk about the Texans pass rush and the Texans defense and what it can do. I think the key for the Patriots is their pass rush and getting CJ Stroud uncomfortable in the backfield, taking advantage of that weaker offensive line.
I mean, there's no doubt about that. And I mean, look, we kind of hit on this earlier, but we should talk a little more about this. The other story of this game was the way the Patriots defense played.
Yeah.
And I didn't think they had that kind of performance in them I think they've been a good defense, but that was dominant.
Elite.
And
yeah.
Justin, Milton Williams he reminds me of Aaron Donald.
Yes.
I mean, he's a man amongst boys. He tilts the field when he's healthy and he's out there. And when they have Milton Williams going and they have Jack Spillane and the whole thing, you know, Christian Gonzalez is hurt this week. That's a big thing that could really affect them. But, you know, they do need, I think, a similar performance this week against the Texans.
Yeah, there's no question about it. I mean, you went the last couple of games of the season without Spillane or Williams, and coincidentally, that's when your pressure rate in the quarterback dropped, and you know the rushing yards per game you were giving up skyrocketed. Those two guys are difference makers, and you see it too. You know, like guys like Caleb on Chase on guys like Christian Barmore. They're benefiting a ton from having those two guys back in the lineup now. So, you know, that defense can hopefully play some complimentary football, and I expect them to bring the pressure because you don't have Christian Gonzalez, but they might not have Nico Collins. And if that's the case, right. I wash that out, you know?
Yeah. I think it's way more likely that Gonzalez plays than Nico Collins plays.
I agreed. I mean, Nico got carted off the field, you know?
Carted off the field.
Yeah, that doesn't look good.
It was one less day, too. It was a Monday versus. That's a big difference.
Yes. Yep.
You know, but I think that I don't think the Texans will be able to run the ball with Barmore and Williams in there. And I think that's probably one of the reasons why I really like the Pats in this game. I do expect a lower scoring game because of that. But I don't think the Texans are going to have much success on offense.
I agree. I expect this honestly to be like a 20-10 game, something like that. 20-10, 20. I think the Texans are going to have a lot more difficulty scoring on the Patriots than the Patriots will on the Texans, to be completely honest.
I agree. I agree with that. And I think that I agree with that. So, and then, all right, a couple more quick things about before we move on to around the league. Just very quickly, did Vrabel outcoach Harbaugh on Sunday? Didn't you feel like Vrabel kind of outcoached Harbaugh?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, definitely. I think, and again, even Harbaugh, you know, I talked about Justin Herbert in his press conference after the game. I mean, Harbaugh
was apathetic.
I would have been pretty PO'd if I was a Chargers fan, listen to him get up there and talk about, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what we got to do. I don't have answers. That was the emotions of somebody who was truly defeated and outcoached for the last, 60 minutes, whatever it was.
Yeah. What did you think about, I thought maybe the biggest mistake Harbaugh made was on the first turnover, the May interception, you know, not taking the 3 points. I said, yeah. I thought that was a huge mistake. Like you knew this was going to be a tight game from the way that first quarter was going. You got to take some points when you're gifted a turnover that deep in territory like that. I feel like you can't walk away with the zero. And I thought that was a huge mistake.
I agree. Harman. You know, I know the style now, the analytics is, you know, more aggressiveness, going for it more in fourth down. But look, let's face it. I think you gotta be a little bit more tactful when you take that approach. And I think the Chargers were kind of reckless. And you know what? Look, that would have been a huge 3 points in a game that was so low scoring and so tough to move the ball for the Chargers.
Yeah, 1,000%. And then my last question for you before we move to around the league, Justin, you have been predicting the Ramondre Stevenson turnover for weeks. Is this the week it finally happens?
I mean, I hope not. This is the one thing I don't want to be right about. The guy has been very good lately. And we said this last week, we said this in previous weeks, he's really come on. He's really been an asset. Obviously being, you know, having someone like Travion Henderson in there to kind of bear, you know, spell him and play meaningful snaps has been monumental for him. But I am still not ruling out that something bad is going to happen at an inopportune time. And it could be next week. Maybe it's in an AFC championship game. Who knows? But I'll tell you this. If I was the Texans, my scouting report would be anytime the ball is in Ramondre's hands, try to get that freaking thing loose.
Yeah, well, that's why I brought it up, because we're talking about a fast, aggressive, attacking defense that seems to number three in the league in forcing turnovers. And, yep. You know, it just seems like Stevenson, he has that history. I know everything's been really hunky-dory with him the last few weeks. He's been great. Like, I'm not in any way diminishing what he has been. He's been huge for this team coming down the stretch. But I got to say, that's one thing that is in the back of my head a little bit, is like, is this the week that Stevenson coughs one up? Because this defense is a ball hawking defense.
They are. They're a ball hawking defense. They're great at forcing turnovers, and everybody on that side of the ball is a beast. There are no weaknesses. And you know, somebody like a D'Amico Ryans is smart. He's a defensive guy himself. He's going to be telling those guys, make no mistakes about it, he's going to be telling that Texans defense, that's our opportunity. Punch that damn thing out. Rip that thing out when it's in Ramondre's hands. You know, they got guys that are talented that are good at doing that. So I think you know, obviously, you know, if you're Ramondre, you gotta have your wits about you. But I also hope that the offense doesn't put him in a position where, you know, he is exposed that much. Like, I'd like to see Ramondre Stevenson honestly used sparingly this week.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, And I would say, like, my sort of paradoxical instinct about this game is that I feel like, just from watching last night and watching this Texans defense, I think their place, their most vulnerable, is actually one of Drake May's biggest strengths, which is throwing the ball deep downfield. So, you know, like, I don't know, you know, do you try to do the run and the screen passes? They got so much speed in their front seven.
Yeah.
I think that almost neutralizes a lot of that stuff. I feel like you got to, you know, maybe max protect me, take some chances downfield, and that's how you beat them. But it is going to be a challenge for sure.
Yeah, totally. Look, I think I expect the Texans to come in and put up a good effort. At the end of the day, I trust McDaniels and May more than I trust Stroud and their OC. And that's why I think, you know, I think we're going to be able to scheme and come up with a better game plan and hopefully outcoach the Texans. And again, what I saw last week in our defense made me confident that we can step up to the plate and make things difficult for them on offense too. So.
Yeah, and you know what, Justin? I just think to, like, all those games in the Brady era when McDaniels would neutralize a pass rush by just, you know, Brady's ability to make the quick read and deliver the ball. And, like, how many times, you know, did they go into a game with, like, a beat-up offensive line against a really good defense, and it didn't matter because Brady just had this ability to read defenses and deliver the ball quickly? May has shown a lot of that this year. So I think that's probably going to be one of the keys to this game, is if he is up to the challenge of making those snap quick decisions and not ever once making that, like, critical pick six kind of mistake.
100%. And look, this is the game that I would hope that, you know, you got guys like Pop Douglas, Efton Chisholm, even Diggs, that are very quick, that can run these, you know, little short routes. You know, it can almost be maybe like a death by a million paper cut type of thing, setting yourself up for the big play, but give you an opportunity to get the ball out of Drake May's hands quickly. You know, he shouldn't have to hold on to the ball when you got some of these speedsters who can navigate the line of scrimmage, you know, pretty quickly.
Yeah, 1,000%. We'll see how that goes. But that to me is just like, that might be one of the keys to the game. You know, Brady would neutralize this pass rush.
Yes.
He would neutralize it with his ability to read. If May does 75% of that, the Patriots are going to win and score some points on Sunday.
Agreed.
All right. You ready to move around the league, dude? Because there is, like, it's crazy stuff. Everything just went like bananas in the last couple days. Started last week with Mike McDaniels getting fired the day after we recorded. We'll get to that in a minute, but the lead story today is obviously Mike Tomlin resigning as head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers after 19 years. Not surprised at all by this news, Justin. I think this is one of those things where change was necessary. Tomlin is a terrific coach, but, you know, it just felt like, I don't know, maybe it wasn't, the message wasn't resonating anymore in that Pittsburgh locker room. And Pittsburgh to me looks like an organization that just needs a total redo, new quarterback, new coach, new everything. And wherever Mike Tomlin lands, and I assume he's going to coach again next year. I guess we'll see. I mean, he is still a heck of a football coach.
You know, I agree. I've always held Mike Tomlin in high regards. You know, the way I look at that situation is, Mike Tomlin still in those 19 years hadn't had a season finishing below 500. Right. And right. I think that speaks volumes to the type of coach he is. You know, you look back though, from the last couple of years of Ben Roethlisberger, when he was basically a mummy back there, all the way up to where they're at now, this organization has not done anything to give him a talented franchise quarterback to work with, right? He's basically gone almost the last decade or close to it, trying to squeeze water out of a stone, whether it was with a hobbled Ben Roethlisberger, a 40-something-year-old Aaron Rodgers, a bunch of journeyman, you know, backups, guys like Justin Fields, guys like Russell Wilson, guys like
Mason Rudolph. They made the playoffs with Mason Rudolph 2 years ago.
Right. So, you know, to me, I can't look at Mike Tomlin and blame him for the lack of success that they've had in Pittsburgh. I look at the Steelers organization and I think the lack of quarterbacks what's done them in.
Oh, 10,000%. And it's one of those things where, look, Ben Roethlisberger, when he had some mobility, he was one of the best quarterbacks in the league.
Yes.
But you're spot on. There was like a 3 to 4 year window at the end of his career where you could see he had lost his mobility. Yeah. He wasn't the same player. It was obvious that there needed to be transition at that position for Pittsburgh, and they never addressed it.
No.
They let it go. And then he left, and they didn't address it. And then they took Kenny Pickett with like the 25th pick, which was a swing and a miss. They haven't taken another swing now. That was 4 drafts ago. They haven't taken another shot. And I would even point out this year where Jackson Dart was there when they were picking, and they didn't take Jackson Dart. How much different would you feel about this Pittsburgh organization if Jackson Dart was on that roster? It would be a totally different situation. So, you know, they need a quarterback. They need to address the quarterback position. I thought Mike Tomlin squeezed as much as he could from what he was given.
I agree.
And the reality is, you know, hey, look, if they want to point the finger at him, if this was a mutual thing, maybe it was a mutual thing. Maybe this is one of the things where like, hey, we're going to fire you, so you should resign. I mean, Pittsburgh fans want to point the finger at Mike Tomlin, go ahead. But the problem with that franchise is they just haven't addressed the quarterback position.
No, it's been a Band-Aid fix for them for the last, you know, 7-8 years. And that's what's been their downfall, not Mike Tomlin. And, you know, just to take it to that division in general, right? How kind of comical is it? You know, you look at the four coaches in that division, you know, you got Harbaugh, you got Tomlin, you got Stefanski, and they're all out, and Zach Taylor is the one who's keeping his job heading into next year, right? Like that to me is just so ass backwards. But you know what? Again, I think Tomlin is hopefully going to find himself in a good situation, because God knows there's a bunch of them out there right now.
Even this year, Justin, right? Look what he got out of Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
You know, getting that. Look what Aaron Rodgers was cut by the New York Jets. Nobody in the league wanted Aaron Rodgers. He was a free agent. He was signed in like June by Pittsburgh. He took Aaron Rodgers and brought that team to the playoffs with a shell of himself, Aaron Rodgers.
Exactly. So I know the fans in Pittsburgh, you know, they're kind of soured on Mike Tomlin. Sounds like the organization might be too, but I think it's the exact opposite. I think that guy's done a great job getting the most out of what they've given him to work with. Again, he hasn't had a team go under 500 in his entire career. I think that speaks volumes. And the quarterback is the most important position in professional sports, and they've given him virtually nothing to work with. So, you know what? Look, if they want to point the finger at Mike Tomlin, that's fine. But I'll tell you what, I'm still very high on Mike Tomlin, and I want to see him land and get back on his feet somewhere else, because I think there's a lot of good opportunities out there for him.
1,000%. And he will absolutely land on his feet. He is a terrific NFL coach. All right. Next move that happened just today. We were going to talk about the Philadelphia Eagles at some point on this podcast around the league, who lost at home this week to San Francisco. You know, there was a huge stretch of the season where we said the Philadelphia Eagles were the best team in the NFL. And then what happened? We grew soured on them because we saw it was toxic. And that team backed into the playoffs. They did get a home game because the division stunk. because the division stunk. But when I watch the Philadelphia Eagles, again, I see the JV offense from the 1998, you know, Braintree High football team. That offense was bland, vanilla, lack creativity, and just completely out of sync. And I know a lot of Eagles fans want to point the finger at the quarterback. I like the quarterback. I think the quarterback is good. It's way easier to find a new offensive coordinator than it is to find a Super Bowl winning quarterback. I think the Eagles made the right call. Stick with Jalen Hurts. You got to get rid of this Petula. And let me tell you something else. They got to get rid of AJ Brown and replace him with another receiver. Get rid of Brown. Get rid of Petula. You got to roll with Sirianni and Hurts because they've done it so recently. And you move forward and hope that you can fix the mess.
Yeah, well, I agree. I think, you know, when it comes to the Eagles, they're a classic example of they don't have a talent problem. They have a culture problem somewhere in that organization, right? I mean, look, you can argue that Brown and Saquon may be, you know, in the back end of their careers or maybe, you know, exiting their prime. But let's make no mistakes about it. They got one of the best offensive lines in the league. They got a Super Bowl winning quarterback in his prime. They got AJ Brown, Devontae Smith, Dallas Goedert, Saquon Barkley. I mean, the talent is there in that Eagles offense. Now, there's no excuse for how poorly they've performed the majority of the year and on Sunday. So, you know, you got to say there's something dysfunctional. There's something dysfunctional relationship, culture-wise, that's just totally separating these guys and not allowing them to come together and perform up to what their ability should be. I mean, look, 2025, the Super Bowl last year was less than a year ago. Okay. You can't tell me that that team looked from being one of the most well-oiled machines in football to all of a sudden, you know, not having the talent capable of going out there in winning a couple of playoff games. It's a relationship problem at this point. I don't know whether it's, like you said, the offensive coordinator, AJ Brown, Sirianni, Hurts, a combination of all that. But there is something that needs to be fixed there. And it's not a talent issue.
It isn't a talent issue, but I would also say I don't think we talk enough about the fact that Saquon Barkley kind of fell off the cliff this year. And like he was a shell of himself. And that was a big part of the problem too, was the fact that Barkley is just not the same player. And we've seen this so many times with running backs where they hit this point and he's not the same player. And I think that was a huge part of the problem. But to me, when I look at that team, it was a combination of a very vanilla offense, a receiver and a quarterback that hated each other, and a running back that suddenly very quickly became past his prime. I don't think we should forget how great Jalen Hurts looked in the last two Super Bowls. You know, I just don't think you should ignore that and throw this guy to the curb. So you got to keep the quarterback and you got to try and build around the quarterback because that's the asset that's the hardest to replace. So they made the right call, in my opinion.
I think they did. You know, I want to take a back.
Well, I guess we don't know if they're going to keep Hurts yet, but I'm assuming they're keeping
him. Assume they're keeping Hurts. I'd be very curious about this though. You know, I know Sirianni won a Super Bowl, but there's been a lot of rumors and whispers over the last couple of years about some of the dysfunction with Nick Sirianni, his relationship with Jalen Hurts, his relationship with some of the guys on that team, rubbing people in the locker room the wrong way. Do you consider moving on from Sirianni when you got guys like Harbaugh and Tomlin and Stefanski and some of these? I mean, I'll tell you what, I'll take any of those. I'll take Tomlin and Harbaugh over Sirianni on that Eagles team any day. I think they would be perfect fits for that defense and that city. I mean, I just think it's something you got to think about.
Well, Tomlin in Philadelphia would be an amazing fit. Right? So I mean, that's something that, you know, you dangle that out there and I don't know if they go after that, but you know, generally speaking, I would say, look, I don't know what Sirianni does to the world to piss people off because he does something, because like, if you look at what this guy's accomplished in his coaching career, he's had a super successful and productive career. And yet people want to fire this guy as if he's like, you know, Rich Kotite. I'm going back to the Jets coach that was 2-14, a name you don't remember or something like that. But like, you know, like he's the worst coach in the league, when the reality is, like, even in his bad years, they're making the playoffs and win the division. They won a Super Bowl 2 years ago. They made a Super Bowl a few years before that.
Right.
You know, but there's something about this guy that's just like pisses people off. And there's also something about that locker room, and like, they have more damn drama. The ratio of like on-field success to off-field drama, it leads the league. Like, no team that wins this much should have that many problems in its locker room.
100%. And that's really what I'm saying, man. I'm not saying that the guy might not actually be a good coach. I'm not denying the success he's had. But there's clearly something that is causing his likability, both externally outside the organization and internally within the organization, in the locker room, to be as rocky as it has been over the last couple of years. I mean, look, where there's smoke, there's fire. And there's been smoke in that locker room and in that team the last couple of years. So, you know, I can't exactly put my finger on what it is, but
he has an interesting personality, and you see that shine through in the way he speaks to the media and the public. And you have to wonder if that's kind of trickles into his locker room.
You do. And like, to me though, that's where it's like, you know, if you bring in a guy like a Tomlin, who is known for the exact opposite, known for being a player's coach, known for being loved by his team, known for running a tight ship in the locker room. Does that all of a sudden fix the problems with AJ Brown and Jalen Hurts? Does that get somebody like Saquon Barkley, who's still only like 28, 29 years old, to wake up? Like, I don't know. You have to wonder if that could be like the missing piece, where you don't actually have to blow it up. You just have to change the leadership at the top.
Yeah, I mean, Tomlin would be an amazing fit there, but I just have a hard time seeing them move on from Sirianni. I mean, the guy's made the playoffs 4 years in a row. He won a Super Bowl 2 years ago.
Yeah.
But you know, if they, but I would say, I mean, look, if they did it, like, that would be a sexy pairing. Philadelphia with Tomlin would be amazing.
100%.
Okay, next one. Let's talk a little bit about your lookalike, Green Bay. Lost this weekend against Chicago. Matt LaFleur, head coach. Like, I was really surprised that he's kind of on the hot seat, or that there was even talk that LaFleur might get fired. I think he's a damn good coach. I mean, I don't know what, you know, it's kind of funny because we talked all year, Green Bay, Micah Parsons. Well, he gets hurt. You know, it all falls apart. They're one and done in the playoffs. Look, I like Matt LaFleur. I think he's a really great coach. I wouldn't give up on him if I was Green Bay.
I think that's an overreaction, to be completely honest. I don't think he's actually in hot water. I think that was a tough end to the season. You know, a tough way to go out against a bitter rival. And, you know, I think you got emotions and you got the rumor mill starting to swirl, but I would be shocked if inside the organization they're planning on moving on from Matt LaFleur. I mean, the guy came on like a young whiz kid in really just flawlessly.
Right.
You know, has done a great job with that team. He's done a good job with Jordan Love. You know, they had a little bit of the injury bug. Josh Jacobs was hurt. You know, Jordan Love was hurt. Micah Parsons out for the year. So, you know, I can't look and really say it's all Matt LaFleur's fault. Obviously, the way they lost was super disappointing, but I'd be shocked if they move on from him after everything he's done.
Yeah, I agree with that, but I don't know. Like you said, where there's smoke, there's fire, and there's a lot of smoke right now around Matt LaFleur and his future in Green Bay. So, you know, 9 head coaching jobs are open right now, and there have been some real surprises. You know, Harbaugh, you know, obviously Tomlin, a couple others. I wonder if you know, will there be another shoe yet to drop, and will it be for Matt LaFleur?
Yep.
All right. What about your boy, Justin? We didn't get to talk about Mike McDaniels last week because he still had a job on Tuesday. And this is like, to me, one of the all time great stories. And I can just easily imagine how this all played out, because it looked like Mike McDaniels was safe. And then he went in for an interview with the owner, Stephen Ross. And I can only imagine what that flake said in that interview. And when you hear the guy and the way he presents publicly, it's easy to imagine that him just being and acting like a complete weirdo.
Yes.
And this guy, Ross, the owner, being like, you know what? I'm done with this idiot. And just saying, you're fired.
Dude, 100%. You know, the guy, you talk about someone who rubs people the wrong way. He rubs people the wrong way. you know, we've said all year that we were shocked that he survived the first half of the season. I can't believe his leash has been as long as it has been. And it was about time, you know, because Miami, you talk about what Miami needs. There's obviously a lot Miami needs from a talent standpoint, but, you know, they're at the top of the list as far as teams that need a culture change. And you weren't going to get that with Mike McDaniel. And I think, you know, it was a combination of a couple things. He probably went in and sounded like an idiot in the meeting with the owner. He probably, you know, the owner probably saw some of these names that were coming available and said, you know, I really do have better options than Mike freaking McDaniel. And, you know, I think it's just one of those things where the time had ran out and he had overstayed his welcome in Miami. I mean, the guy was on borrowed time. He's been on borrowed time since early this season.
He should have been fired last year.
Yeah.
That's the reality. Yeah. And it must have been like one of those things where Stephen Ross just like had an epiphany and was like, what? Like, you know, when you're dating that girl and you're like, wait a sec, who am I really what kind of person am I, you know, dating here? Like, I got to get out of this thing. And I think that's kind of what happened with Stephen Ross, where he's like, look, you know, wait a minute. This idiot just came into my office and said this, that, and I'm done with this weirdo.
Yeah.
And just said, get out of it. You know, I think that's really what happened. And then the other factor is there are so many great coaching candidates this year. And I'm sure that was a factor in the math as well. And don't be surprised if the Dolphins go heavy for Jim Harbaugh. Because yeah. I think I wonder if that was sort of a part of the impetus too.
Yeah, exactly. I totally agree. I think part of it is you see who's available out there and you just realize that there are upgrades that could be had. And you know, again, like you said, he probably pulled a Step Brothers. He probably farted in the interview after he had the job, right?
That's like exactly
that, you know, so it's like, I'm sure he didn't do himself any favors.
He maybe had some pan confusion or something.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. You know what? It's only all right. Couple more quick things. We're talking about a lot of coaches getting fired. I'll tell you one coach that's definitely not getting fired, and that's Kyle Shanahan. What this guy did this year with a roster decimated by injuries, you know, to come out and go on the road and win a playoff game in Philadelphia. I think the whole world thought Philadelphia was going to win that game. I know I did. You know, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what to say. Shanahan is just a terrific coach. Brock Purdy deserves respect for what he's doing. Like, I don't think it's a fluke. I mean, I think that whatever Brock Purdy is, I think he's more than just, you know, I don't think you can diminish him at this point. Like, he's a damn good quarterback.
He is. He's been playing awesome. You know, I've really come around, especially this year, on Kyle Shanahan. I think if there was ever a team that had excuses to make, it was this 49ers team. I mean, they lost Bosa. They lost Fred Warner. They lost Brandon Ayuk. They lost Debo Samuel. They had to play half the year with Mac Jones. George Kittle missed time on and off. I mean, the list, they lost big names in free agency on the defensive side of the ball. I mean, this team arguably has more excuses than anybody else in the NFL. In they've found ways to not only be competitive, but I think surprise everybody, you know, finishing the season, what was it, 13-4, something. I never would have pictured that, especially after everything they lost and all the hardships they face. And I'll give you one better. I actually put in a parlay earlier today, and I got the 49ers going into Seattle in winning that game next week.
I love that call. And let's not forget, they played recently, and I know that, you know, was it a 13-3 game or something like that, but it's not like, I don't know, it's not like they destroyed them either. No, so
49ers beat them beginning of the year too, opening week
in Seattle,
and also when it comes to the 49ers too, I just want to say, you know, this guy, I know we all know how good he is, but I think he just needs his flowers, because, you know, when Christian McCaffrey is healthy, is there a bigger game changer in football these last few years when he's healthy and he's playing? I mean, that guy is just incredible. He single-handedly keeps that offense afloat. I mean, so dynamic, especially now. We've always known he's a great running back, but you know, you see what he's doing in the receiving game. He's arguably just as good of a receiver as he is a running back. Two touchdowns again this weekend against a good defense. He just opens things up. And as long as he can be healthy, I think they have a chance to win any game they play.
one of them on a nasty trick play, too. That was an absolute dagger to Philadelphia.
Yes, yes, exactly. So, you know, yeah, for that reason, I think as long as they go into this game with a healthy Christian McCaffrey, they can beat Seattle. That and the fact that I don't trust Sam Darnold as far as I can throw him, but that's another story.
Well, that's going to be one of the real questions this week is what Darnold does, you know, this week, because the stakes are high again.
Yep.
Okay, we're going to end on this, Justin. Restructuring the Talented Loser Club. We already talked about this a little, but, you know, look, I that Buffalo-Jacksonville game, that was one of the best wild card games I think I've ever seen. Super intense game. Trevor Lawrence showed me something in that game. He still barfed on his shoes when it really counted. I'm not saying he's not a talented loser, but hey, look, I mean, this was the best football I think we've ever gotten out of Trevor Lawrence the last 5 or 6 weeks. Liam Cohen is a great coach. That was a great hire. I think he's building a program down there. The team is amazing. I mean, the team is amazing. Like you couldn't surround Trevor Lawrence with much better talent than he has. I mean, he's got 3 or 4 good receivers, a couple good backs, great offensive coach, you know. I don't know what we'll get from Trevor Lawrence moving forward. He might always be that guy that throws that big pick in the key spot, but I do think we're going to see the best from him, you know, with the situation he has around him.
Yeah. I mean, look, Trevor Lawrence, he stepped it up and he proved that he is capable of being a franchise quarterback this year. Something that for the first 4 or 5 years of his career, I know we did, and hopefully, you know, other people out there were doubting. I think he went a long way towards reversing that stigma and maybe even getting his way eventually out of the Talented Losers Club. I will say, in order to officially retire and earn his way out of there, he's got to at least, you know, do this multiple times, right? It can't just be a flash in the pan season. I do eventually need to go see him win a good playoff game against a good team. Don't forget, his only playoff win was against Justin freaking Herbert, right? And that was an absolute toilet bowl of a game. They were both trying to give that game away to each other. But I agree. I think Trevor Lawrence did a lot this year for himself. If we're restructuring the hierarchy, the Talented Loser Club, I mean, there's still some things to be determined, but Justin Herbert is firmly the president. I think Caleb Williams is working his way out of there.
Trevor Lawrence, I think he's out. That was going to be my next point. He's out. Williams is out. Caleb Williams is a winner.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I don't think he's the generational talent that everyone says he is. I mean, but that's fine. But like, he's a winner. I mean, you know, he's a good quarterback. I still like Drake May better. Don't get me wrong. I don't think he's the messiah of football that they want him to be. He's a very good quarterback, and he has that clutch gene. He wins close games.
Yeah,
So Williams is out of the Talented Loser Club.
Yeah, I would probably agree with that. I think depending on what happens this weekend, right? If Sam Darnold goes and loses this weekend, it's going to be Herbert president, Darnold vice president, Lawrence secretary. That's how I'm going to rank it.
Okay,
but
fair. Yeah. See, I still like Darnold. I'm still going Herbert president, Lawrence vice president. And then I don't know if I'm even putting Darnold in there. I want to see what he does when he has the opportunity. But, you know, I'm holding a referendum on Sam Darnold to see where he lands, if he even belongs in. And I have Caleb Williams out of the Talented Loser Club.
Yeah, fair. Fair enough.
All right, my friend, anything else you want to add? Anything we missed?
No, not really. I'm just, really looking forward to next week. Should be another great slate of football. You know, Bears, Rams, 49ers, Seahawks, Bills in Denver, Patriots host another home game. I think it's going to be another great weekend of football. I'm excited.
Who wins this week?
This week, I think.
Give me a score for the Pats game.
Okay. I think we wind up getting a 49ers Rams NFC championship, and I think we wind up getting a Bills Patriots AFC championship. I think the Patriots beat the Texans. I'm going to say 23-13.
I like that. In the first game, I like Buffalo. I love Buffalo in that first game.
Yeah.
Second game, I'm going Rams over the, Rams over the Bears, right? And then I like the Pats I'm going to call it 20 to 10, Pats. I think you get another low scoring game.
Yep.
Mayo make a few plays, they'll win. And then last game, I'm going to go with the Seahawks over the Niners. So,
I mean, the Seahawks defense is so really in, you know, Sam Darnold does not have to be a world beater with how good that defense is. He just can't crap his pants. That's pretty much right. It. You know?
Right. So, I mean, you saw that in the first game where, like, you know, right. He barfed that game away a couple times, but that team was so good. Defense was so good. Special teams plays. Exactly. And he's still able to win.
Yep.
All right, man. Well, we want to thank everyone. We're going to wrap it up. I want to thank everyone that took the time to listen to this episode of the Dr. Football Ultimate Patriots podcast. Wishing you all a great week, a healthy week, a safe week. Enjoy. Oh my God. There's nothing until football next Saturday. So there's no Thursday night football. There's no college football. So it'll be a long week, but Bruins, Celtics, other stuff, but I don't know, board games, you know, maybe talk to someone. I don't know. Do your thing. Read a book. I don't know. But whatever it is, keep yourself entertained. Stay out of trouble. We'll catch you next week with another episode. Be good, everyone.